Today's daf in Masechet Kiddushin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yirat Kodesh, is daf Samach Aleph, and we're holding it the Halakha Mishnah on Samach Amud Beit. So we're continuing. This Mishnah is actually the end of the previous Mishnah. As can be seen, it's just a repetition of exactly the same halachas, and the Gemara, of course, is going to explain what do we need the repetition for. In the previous Mishnah, we were talking about the type of conditions which had to do with, do I have $200 or $200 million? I'll show you $200 million. If he had $2 million, he showed her $2 million, whether he needs to have a portion of them, or whether that would make a difference. Here we're talking about the same thing, except that it refers to property. So he says to her, okay, so I'm giving you this ring to be my wife, on condition that I own that amount of land. So I've got one Beit Kur of land. It's not a bad amount of land. That's close to 5 acres of land. So I raise you mikudeshet v'yeshlo, which of course will have the same question we had on the previous, but what do you mean v'yeshlo? Does it mean when yeshlo or what? Hamanachi yeshli b'makom ploni. In the previous Mishnah, we were talking about if I give you the amount that I promised within 30 days, and over here, he talks about instead of the time limit, he talks about the space limit, so that I need to show you that I have this land in such and such a place. So then, again, repeats what seems to be obvious, just as in the previous Mishnah. So then the condition is only fulfilled if indeed he has it in that place. Then mekudesha. V'im lav eina mekudesha. Amanachi ar eich beit kurafar. Again, a perfect mirror image of the original Mishnah, except we put in, shouldn't say mirror image, a perfect juxtaposition, which we put in the word karka instead of the money. So over here, amanacha er ech beit kurafar, I will show you that amount of land. Obviously, that means I'll show you that I have that amount of land, and I'll show you the land. So then, he has to actually, v'yarena, so sharezu mikudashet, he has to show it to her. And if he shows it to her in a general valley full of different fields, and he says, here you go, there's 5 acres of land, like it? That's not going to help. But of course, the Gemara is going to ask, well, obviously that's not going to help. But we'll see here too, it means that he has some kind of portion in it, and we'll talk about what that means in terms of land versus the money on the bank counter. All right, so now, says the Gemara, so it seems to be saying over here that if you know that he has it, so then she's mekudeshet. But then, if we don't know, so then she would not be mekudeshet, meaning she would not be mekudeshet, and she can go marry whoever she wants. I mean, does that make sense? How can we know for a fact that he doesn't have? Don't we have to be worried that maybe he's got this land? So v'nechur shema yeshlo. And the truth is that it says in a brayta beferish, again, this is the Gemara, is exactly a repetition of the Gemara we had yesterday after the first part of the Mishnah. There's a brayta that says beferish, we are chashish chashin and shema yeshlo, and she'd never be able to get married if she can't, we can't know for a fact. So how would we know? We'll always have to worry and he'd have to give her a get. And says the Gemara, fine. The Mishnah doesn't imply that if he doesn't show her the land, that she's definitely not married. We're talking about that it's the Kiddushin, that the Brisa says that we're Choshish LeKiddushin, correct. That is Kiddush HaSafik. And when the Mishnah says we need to know, that's in order to make it a 100% Kiddushin. So I understand, then it's the same exact din that we said in the first part of the Mishnah. So why do we need to repeat this? Why do we need to say it once in terms of land and once in terms of cash? Same idea, isn't it? No. Actually, tzricha. Each one of the parts of the Mishnah tells us a chiddush. I would have said, look, only if we actually have witnesses that there is money, do we need to worry about it. You know, because people, in fact, are not always going to expose the money they have, and they might have money somewhere hidden, and they might have buried money, they might have a deposit box or something. So it doesn't help to check all the banks and so on. You'll never know. So there, you have to worry, and it'll always be Kedusha Suffolk. Mashiach, when it comes to land, maybe I would think, I mean, come on. I mean, if a guy owns 5 acres of land, I mean, that's traceable, isn't it? So kola itle, and then I would have said that maybe in this case, we can be sure that he doesn't own the land because we can't trace it. And therefore, it would be actually a vadai non-mikudeshet that she could go and marry anybody that she wants. Gamashmalam, by putting the two together, the Mishnah is telling us exactly the same issues that you have by cash, you have by land. And therefore, in the same way we understand it over there, there's no way for us to prove that she's not mikudeshet if we can't prove that he has the cash. So too, when it comes to the land, it's exactly the same. And we don't say that, I mean, how can you own land and nobody would know about it? Even so, it's certainly a possibility. And if you can't prove that he has it, you're never going to be able to prove he doesn't have it. And therefore, the Kedusha Suffolk will always be a problem. In order for her to marry, she would need to get a get. Okay, then again, we're going to go through exactly the same issues we went through yesterday on the first part of the Mishnah, that got to be cash. What if he says, and now when it came to the cash, as I pointed out, that was a question of amount of time, 30 days. When it comes to the place, it's a question of being in a specific location. So in this Mishnah, it says, if he defines the land has got to be in such and such a location, then he's got to show her the land he has in that location. Well, obviously, that's what he said, isn't it? And again, we have to explain what the Chiddush is, just like we did in the Reisha. Ma'odetema, Omar la, my nafkalach mina. You might have thought that he could say to her afterwards, when he shows her the land, that it's not exactly in the place. Now, that place might have been very convenient for her, and therefore it would make her feel secure financially. And if it isn't nearby, I mean, so she feels, I don't know. I mean, how do we know we're able to really get the produce of that land or to get the value of what that land is? So you might have thought that he could say, listen, I mean, you know, I meant it's like the same thing, but what do you care? I mean, you're not going to be working the land. I'm going to be working the land. So I don't mind getting up 2 hours before, and I'll go out there and I'll work the land. And, you know, you'll have exactly the same thing as if it were next door, you know. It's my problem. Kamashmalan, no. This is meant as an absolute tenai. In the same way, in the ratio of the mission, we were talking about the equivalent case where it was dealing with cash. Over there, we said perhaps he only said that, you know, just to urge himself on, bizrizut, maybe it has to be within 30 days. Here, it means exactly what he meant there. No, it's part of the actual condition. Either you keep the condition or you don't. The next piece also is a repetition. Here it says, if he said, I'll show you these 5 acres. I mean, so it says over here that he shows her. I mean, but it means he shows her his land. Obviously, this woman is waiting to see, okay, don't talk of love. Show me. That's what she's saying. I want to see how you're going to provide for me. I'm not interested in you giving me a tour of land. If he shows her land in a valley, so then she's not mikudeshet. Isn't that sort of obvious? I mean, it's not his, is it? It's talking about over here. That in a sense it is his because he has an arrangement to be an oris. So he's gonna take a share of this. Maybe he takes 25% of the produce because he works it. So lo tzricha the naked bedistura. It's talking about over here that he's got an arrangement to be the farmer on it, sharecropping, and therefore he does own it in a sense because he's going to be able to support her from it. Even in that case, no, he said I own it. Now, the question is when we're talking about land. What is included in that land? I mean, because does it need to be completely a piece of land that is 100% agriculturally productive? I mean, what if he's got a parking lot on it and some of it, and it's not really usable for production? Does that count to the land? Does the driveway count? I mean, how much is included in those 5 acres? So we know that the Torah actually defines this in a very interesting place, because remember that there's a special halacha in which the Torah gives a set value, an erechin, where the amount of land is defined according to its, the same way that there's erechin for people, defined according to their age and sex, there's also erechin for land in certain cases, but only in very special cases, where a certain amount of land is given a specific amount of value, no matter what that land is like, good or bad, just like a person, no matter what, there may be on his deathbed, but he's still worth precisely the same amount. And he, you know, he might be a star football player, or he might be a cripple who can barely move. It doesn't make any difference. That's the Erechin. Same thing is true of the land. In what condition? That's talking about a case where somebody takes a stay achuza and he gives it to Hegdesh. And then there's a special halacha that if this is during the time that there is a yovel, he is allowed to buy it back, to be paid it from Hegdesh, but it goes according to a very strict formula. So Amakdish Sadeo Bishat HaYovel, every piece of land which contains Zera Chomer Seorim, you pay a total of Chamishim Shekel Kesef for the entire period of the Yovel. So in other words, this Chomer Seorim, that means a kur, a Beit Kur. Remember that the measurements of land are always in terms of the agricultural value in terms of its size, goes according to the number of seeds of a particular species that you would be able to plant in that amount, in that area of land. That's why it always gives the shear of land as a certain volume. What does volume have to do with shear land? Because the volume is referring to the volume of a container of seeds that you could plant. And then, of course, you'll have to define what type of seeds. Some species have very tiny seeds. Other species have larger seeds. So here, too, if you have a area that can hold a chomer, that is to say, the shear of the Beit Kur, a place we could plant a kur, of what type of seeds? Barley seeds, seorim, and it's got a big area. That's a pretty big area. That's 75,000 square amas, actually, it turns into, and that's the Beit Sa'atayim we learn out from the shear of the Mishkan, which is 100 by 50. So over here, it would be, if he's talking about this amount, then that would mean you'd need to multiply that to a point where you come to 75,000, because that would be only a 2 Sa'ah. So in this case, you pay over the entire period, if there's only half of that amount of time left, so then you buy it back for half of that value and so on. So it's prorated. Now, the question is, over there, we have to define what is considered land. So how about rocky areas that are not able to be used in that area? How about if it is usable, but it's like a hole, and you have to go down into this hole? So the din is that over there, if you've got rocky areas, or you've got little areas where it goes down, you have to go down with your tractor into it. So if there are these deep holes, I don't know what you would call it. It's not holes. I can't think of what word to use. But anyway, you've got a lower area. Heck, if anybody can come up with the word, please tell me. So if you, sorry? Yeah, but a pit goes straight down. Here we're talking about the koyim, where, you know, just the land.
Craters.
Huh?
A crater.
Okay, yeah, something like that. It's got to be a better word. But, all right. So if they're 10 tefachim deep, or you've got this rocky area that is 10 tefachim high, they don't count, and they're not included in the amount that you would pay. Einim dadinima. But if it's less than 10 tefachim high or less than 10 tefachim deep, then they are part of the field. So now we asked over there, and this is very important to understand, we asked over there, it's all very nice to say that they're not included in that land, but why would we not prorate them, whatever, let's say, the area of the depression? So the area of the depression maybe is 1% of the size of the 5 acres. Okay, fine, but 1% is also value, right? Why don't we have to also figure the value of them and prorate it? So maybe they're not Mekudesh together with the land to be counted, which would include even the area in which you're going down into the depression. I understand that doesn't count. Maybe you can't plant there at all. But the area that is plantable on the bottom, I mean, why don't we just view that as a separate field? How big is it? 1%, 0.5%, whatever it is, you'll pay that amount. So, I mean, what's the difference? So let me just include it because I'm going to be paying for it anyway. So why, smash them over here, you don't pay anything for that. Now, I know what you're going to tell me. You're going to try to tell me, no. The Torah is giving you a minimal amount, you know. It has to be a Beit Kur. And that wasn't just saying how much. It was telling us the minimum that which this thing applies to. And if less than that, maybe we don't include it at all. That is simply not true. And the din is, it says, beferish in the Braita, v'aminu. Why did it have to say in the pasuk the word sadeh? Ve'im misdeach uzato yakdish ish la'ashem. What do you mean misdeach uzato? Just right. Ve'im miach uzato yakdish ish la'ashem. I mean, obviously, we're talking about property. So what is the point of saying sada? Ah, because if it hadn't said that, let's say it would have just said, Zerach omer se'orim b'chamishim shekel kesef. So then I would have said, okay, the Torah is giving, look, the whole thing is a gzerata katuv, that we're going to be defining a certain amount of value per field, right? No matter what the field is worth on the market. So then if that's the case, maybe the gzerata katuv is that if you have a Zerach Omer Seorim, then this is what it is that you pay. If you were Magdish anything less than that, then these rules don't apply. Maybe. How do I know that even a Letech and a Chatzi Letech and a Sa'ah and a Tarkav, so I mean a Letech is a Chatzi Kur, a Sa'ah is only one out of 30 of a Kur, and then you have a Tarkav. A Tarkav is 2 + 1, trei ve'kav. So that means 3 kavs, which is a chatzi sa'ah. Okay, these are like tiny amounts. For that matter, a filu rova kav. If you could put in just the seeds that go into a rova kav, a little container, but you could plant it in this little plot that you have, how do I know that we prorate that too? Minayin. Talmud lomar sadeh michomakom. That's precisely why it says misteach uzato instead of saying miach uzato. So don't answer me that. So now I've got a question. This is all part of the discussion of the Gemara over there, Lagabe Hekdesh. So how come we don't give the same value since what we're talking about is a prorated part anyway, so it should all count? Therefore, can't be that simple. Must be, as Marukva Barchama says, we're not talking about agricultural land. We're talking about these depressions where they are filled with water and they're not usable for agriculture. And the idea of the sada is that we're talking about agricultural land. If somebody donates his parking lot, which is uses for anything else but parking lots, it's just all rocky land, that is not considered to be sada achuzato, even if it happens to be what he inherited. So, these things are not roy to be planted. That's why the Torah uses zera se'irim, meaning that it needs to be measured by the ability for it to absorb and grow this amount of seed. That's precisely why we measure it in terms of seed, to tell me not to include the parking lot or not to include over here areas that are flooded with water. Well, you got lots of land. I mean, the fact that there's a lake over it, you know, who cares? No. It has to be the actual agricultural land. And you could see this. Read the Mishnah carefully, right? Daikonami. Diktani, why did the Mishnah put together Nika'im et Sla'im? Okay? Because just like the Sla'im Gvohim, the same thing has to be true of the Nika'im that are Amukim. Meaning, you can't seed rock, and you can't seed these nika'im. Why can't you seed them? Must be because they're covered with water. Shema mina, that it's not agricultural land. So, wait a second. So then why does it have to be 10 tefachim deep? This doesn't make any sense. If the issue is whether it's plantable or not, then why are you telling me if it's 10 tefachim high or if it's 10 tefachim deep, that has nothing to do with it? That would only have to do with the question of whether it's looked at as a separate field or not. But now you're telling me, no, it's not included bichlal because it's not plantable. Then it doesn't matter how high it is or how deep it is, does it? It shouldn't. So afilo pachot mikan nami. So how do we explain that it's not agricultural, but only if it's this deep or this high? Because hanu nagneida ara mikro. Those are called drainages, basically. In other words, it's normal for a sada to have an area which will fill with water in the event that it rains and so on, and the field doesn't get flooded. So those are natural drainage pits, but they're not called their own area. They're always looked at as being part of the field. So these are the Nagane Ara, or these are the Shidra Ara. There's always like places you can walk on, you know, where it's not muddy and you're not hurting the plants. Those are like the Shidra Ara. We call them like a spine, so to speak. You're walking along the spine of the earth, but we don't give them their own name as a separate field. They're not actually something other. So then indeed they are batal to the field. And if they wouldn't be 10 tefachim high, we're over there, I mean, walk on something 10 tefachim high or 10 tefachim low, which is way too big. I mean, that's not something that I see as part of the field. Okay, then they would have been counted for the Beit Kur. So therefore, we need two issues. Anyway, this defines how we look at the words Kur. What does that mean? What's included? But it only tells us what it's like for the dinim of a steachuza to be parted from Hegdash. Now, we have also a similar discussion about the dinim of selling. In other words, just like the Gemara Baba Basra goes through the definition of sales. I will sell you X. Okay, what? How do we define X in terms of the halacha? So here too, we have a discussion of I will sell you a Beit Kur. What's included in that Beit Kur? So Gabi Mechretnan, we also have in Baba Basra discussion of what defines the Beit Kur when it comes to selling, secular selling, Beit Kur Afarni Mocher Lecha, and it's the same thing. Ayusham Nikaima Mukim Asarat Tvachim, Oslaim Gvoim Asarat Tvachim, then they're not counted, but less than that, they are counted. And Marukva Barchama explained, don't mix this Mishnah up with what sounds like the equivalent Mishnah, Benogea Steachuza. It's not the same at all. Because here we're talking about even if they are definitely agriculturally useful. So even though these depressions are not covered with water, and therefore you can get down there with your tractor and you can plow them and so on, they don't count. Why? Omer of Papa, why? Because when a person spends money on a defined field as a Beit Kur, he is not talking about buying what appeared to him essentially to be three or four different fields. Well, you know, put together the thing on the bottom of that depression and get your tractor down to the bottom of that depression. It's like buying five different fields. I'm not interested in buying five. I want one area that's going to be easy for me to work. So when it comes to Mecher over there, obviously we think about what the intents are in terms of the buyer and seller. Mashenka, when it comes to Steachuza, where we're dealing with the Gzerat HaKatuv, over there, it depends on how the Torah itself defined it. The Torah over there says Zera. Zera means has to be Ro'ui for Zriya. So, Ein Adam Rotzeh, Sheitein Et Mo'otav. He doesn't want to give his good money for what he thinks is one field, and now he's coming, oh my God, this is like two or three different places. I'm not interested in this piece of land. Ve'yaralo, Kishnayim Shlosha Mekomot. So, when it comes to the definition of the word field, or the word of an acre of land, it is defined according to what we assume people are interested in. Now, the question is, when it comes to Kedushin, what would be the din? Kedushin, of course, is the mission that we just had. The guy says, I have a Beit Kur, and that's my condition. I want to show you that I have a Beit Kur. So what defines the Beit Kur here? Is it defined Lahegdish Medaminala? So we define it the way we would define Hegdesh, and therefore it's defined according to its agricultural usage, or do we say, even if the agricultural usage is there, but when he said to that woman, I'm going to show you a Beit Kur that's mine, it meant one Beit Kur, not three or four different places where you could bring the tractor down into this depression and that depression. So do we compare it to Hegdesh, or do we compare it to Mecher? Says the Gemara, look, it's much more reasonable that we compare it to Hegdash and not to Mecha. Why? Because what she is interested in, this woman, is something other than what a farmer is interested in when he's buying the land, or what a developer is interested in when he's buying the land. She wants to know, like any other good mammal, she wants to know that she's going to be secure in getting together with this male, right? So she doesn't care how much trouble he's got to go to to get this tractor into the depression, the guy can say to the armor, look, you're not doing the farming. I'm doing the farming. Don't sit there complaining about, well, I don't like that field. It's got a big depression in it. I mean, I'll take the tractor down. It's my problem. It's not your problem. And therefore, as long as it produces, which is what Ms. Mammal is looking for, then it should be okay. And therefore, Enoch Hinami, it should be similar to the Hegdish. As long as it's productive land, it's not her problem. Ana Tarach LeMizarana Umaitina. So I'm going to bring the tractor down. I will get it all planted. It's none of your darn business. You'll have plenty to eat. That's the important thing. And this brings us to a very important Richie moment. Uh-oh. We got a slow Richie here. Now, thank you, sir. We have opened here a discussion throughout the last Mishnayos, various Tnaim, right? Now, the whole thing has all been all about Tnai, what's included in the Tnai. Now, in all of these cases, like we had these almanat on condition that, is it all that simple? No, because, I mean, remember, we had various discussions of what is meant. Does he mean milama freya? Does he mean from when its condition is chal? All those machlokas we had up until now. But the question is whether bichlal, have we given you all the information? I mean, did we say the condition precisely the way it need to be said? Or do we have very special halachot about how a condition is phrased in order for it to actually define the transaction? Now, as we pointed out before, the Mishnah is not going to go into details of precisely what it is that you said when it says you made a condition. I mean, remember, we have the Machlokas Rebbe and the Chachomim. Do we say, Kola Emer Almanas, Kemisha Omer Miachshav Domi? We even had a Machlokas about whether it is a Machlokas. You know, while we were in Bavel, we thought it was a Machlokas, and so on and so forth. It's time, once and for all, thinks Rebbe to himself, to let people know that all of the times that we talk about conditions, there are conditions that how it is that you say a condition. And this, of course, brings us directly to the ultimate condition. The ultimate condition, which we find in the Torah, is Moshe Rabbeinu's commitment to the Shvatim of Bnei Gad, of Bnei Reuven, that if they will go ahead and they will, let's start from the beginning of the story. Here we are, we're sitting in Eretz HaGilad, we're about to invade Eretz Israel. Come along, Bnei Gad, Bnei Reuven. They say to Moshe, you know, look, we've got a lot of cattle and sheep, and we need a lot of grazing land. And where we are right now in Eiver HaYarden, there's a heck of a lot of good grazing land up here in the Golan. It was really a little lower than the Golan. Yeah, oh no, I shouldn't have said that. Okay, new, quick.
I was given a tour of the Nachal of God. Within 1 hour, I understood that if I was a animal husbandry person, I would be drunk. There were plateaus of sloped land. You fill it so much, it's like you just see millions of sheep there. You drink some this, and we can't go anywhere else. Those words resonated.
Beautiful. All right. So that's exactly what they felt. We've got to stay here. We don't want to go anywhere else. Nothing could compare with this. So, okay. In doing that, they appear to be rejecting. We'll see that there's a reason why I'm saying all of this over to you. So they appear to be rejecting a desire to have a Nachla within Eretz Canaan because that's the wrong kind of land. It's not the land of their dreams. The land of their dreams is cowboy land, and that's what they want. Okay, so Moshe Rabbeinu says to them, well, you're a bunch of bums. You want to just settle down here and take it easy while the rest of the boys are fighting for the whole of Eretz Yisrael. You're worse than your, well, not worse, you're just like your parents, the Meraglim, and so on. They say, no, wait a minute over here. We are willing to go ahead, and we will be the Marines. We will be the ones who will fight before anybody else. We'll bust up the enemy, and then everybody can come and clean up after us. And we don't intend to sit here on our laurels, and we're going to do this for the next 14 years. We're going to wait until after the 7 years it takes to actually get rid of the enemy and the 7 years it takes to do the nachalas with the goralot and the court cases. You can imagine dealing with splitting things up with Jews. Good Lord. So, okay, so that took indeed 14 years. We're going to wait until everybody gets their nachla. Then we're going to go back home. The only thing we want is to leave our kids and our wives here and our livestock here, and that's it. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, okay, we're going to make this deal. And he calls together the Rosh HaShvatim and says, look, if B'nai Gad V'nai Ruvain do what they said they're going to do, and they go in front of everybody else, and they actually are the ones to be right in front of what it is that they promised to be, then give them their nachla here. Okay, but if not, then they're going to take a nachla with the rest of you guys. Okay, now the question is, why did he have to repeat that? If not, then give it, their nachla will be with everyone else. Im yavru b'nei Gad u'b'nei Reuven nitchem et hayarden, and they become the chalutzim. Kol chalutz lamilchama lifnei Hashem, then unetatem lehem et eretz hagil ad la'achuzah. But if not, im lo yavru chalutzim itchem, then v'nochazu betochachem beretz Kanaan. And if not, then they're going to just get a piece of the action like everyone else. Now, Rabbi Meir learns from this four things that are nagei la'halacha, the way the Rambam explains, is really maybe sub-issues that are included. But there's four basic things that the Rambam brings actually in Hilchas Ishus. In other words, the fundamental relationship over here of women to land and to kibush. Remember that idea that kibush is reproduction, which kibush ha'aretz, therefore, is nogea Hilchas Ishus, which is what we just did. How do we compare the dinim of Tnaim, of selling land, being Makadish land, Magdish land, to being Makadish and Isha? What the heck? Exactly, it's what we've been doing this whole Masechet through from the beginning, for heaven's sakes. These are not small side issues that happen to work out this way. So in the sixth parak of Hilchas Ishus, the Rambam sits down to tell us all the different dinim of Tanaim, all built in the halacha itself of the Rambam of B'nai Gad V'nei Ruvein. So that's what this mission is about. Says Rabbi Meir, look, there's four things that you see from the way that Moshe Rabbeinu spoke. First of all, he says both the positive and the negative. That is called a tnai kaful. Furthermore, he first says the condition. That's called tnai kodim l'maaseh. He doesn't say give this property to B'nai Gad V'nai Ruvein if they go and do this. He says if they go and do this, then give this property to B'nai Gad V'nai Ruvein, right? So that means that the tnai, in order to be a valid tnai, has to come before you said what to do. The third thing is, hein kodem lalav. You have to say what will be, and then say, and what happens if it won't be? Not won't be, and then what happens if it will be? And the fourth thing is that you need to make a condition that is actually fulfillable. If it's a condition that cannot be fulfilled, then it's as if you didn't say anything. So you can't say, if you take me to the moon, then you are at Mekudeshet. Then you'll be Mekudeshet, even if she didn't take you to the moon. Okay, well, maybe she takes you to the moon in other ways, but that's not what the Tanai is considered to be. In any event, so now the mission is going to go through these dinim. So it says Rabbi Meir, the general rule, which is a Gavi point, called Tanai, Sheino Ketanai V'nei Gad V'nei Ruvein, Eino Tanai. That's the klal. Then all of these other specifics, Tnai kaful, hein kodem lalav, tnai kodem lamaisa, and she'ef shelakaimu. Those are the four major issues that make it similar to the tnai v'nei Gad v'nei Reuven. If it doesn't actually follow that model, then it's not considered to be a tnai at all. Wow. Okay. Shenema, vayomer aleihem, im yavru b'nei Gad v'nei Reuven, so then you'll give them the scale. And then Moshe Rabbeinu continues saying, but im lo yavru. What do I need to have? Im lo yavru. So therefore, you see, you absolutely must make a tanai kaful. Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel omer, no, no, no. How does it prove that? I don't understand. What if Moshe Rabbeinu hadn't said, and if not, then give them their chelek along with everybody else in Eretz Canaan, right? Well, obviously he needed to say that. I mean, consider the situation over here. These guys have said, we don't want to go to Eretz Canaan. Okay, great. You don't want to go to Eretz Canaan? Don't go to Eretz Canaan. And now we're making it tonight. If you help us in Eretz Canaan, then you get this land. Okay, and if you don't help us, get out of here. Go live in Paris or some junky place like that. Well, why would you get any chelik in Eretz Yisrael, right? We can give you Athens, Italy. I don't know what you want. But certainly you can't be part of us. Maybe you want to settle in Angola. Good. So obviously, Moshe Rabbeinu had to say, look, even if they don't do what they said they would do, they'll still get a chelek in Eretz Canaan itself, and we'll split Eretz Canaan itself differently. And then we would split everything, you know. Okay, so says the Gemara, hey, that is a darn good point. If Moshe Rabbeinu had not said a Tanai Kaful, then we would have made the mistake of thinking that they wouldn't get any property, and that's why Moshe had to say it. But how does that prove that if you don't make a Tanai Kaful, that it wouldn't be a Tanai at all, and we would just ignore the Tanai? That doesn't make sense. Shapiko Amalei Rabbi Chanina Megamalil Rabbi Meir, this is a very, very good point. Amalecha Rabbi Meir, no, it's not a good point. Because if the only issue were the question of whether they would get anything at all, then why would Moshe Rabbeinu have to repeat the words Be'eretz Canaan? All he would have needed to say is, Lichtov im lo yavru, and if they don't, then v'nochazu betochachem. Then they get like everybody else, with you. I mean, obviously Be'eretz Canaan, I don't understand. So that's why the repetition of Be'eretz Canaan comes to tell me the words Be'eretz Canaan lomali must be that the words of Eretz Canaan are basically to juxtapose. That's the point. You would be getting the land in Eretz HaGilad, and I'm telling you that the alternative to juxtapose Eretz Canaan, that is telling me that this is necessary for you to know that this is the precise opposite of what would be with this tonight. I know already that they would get a chelek, so that therefore they are there to tell me they will not get Gilad. They wanted Gilad. They made a promise for Gilad. They fought for Gilad. Well, tough. If they don't keep their promise, they're not going to get Gilad. So that means that if it hadn't been for this repetition, then they would have gotten some chelek in Gilad, right? And therefore, it wouldn't have mattered whether they went or they didn't go in front of everybody else. So that's why I'm telling you, you learn from here, you need a Tanai Kaful. And Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel says, no, I agree with you that this is different than what I said, you're right, but nonetheless, if the Torah hadn't written Be'eretz Canaan Beferish, so then I might have thought that the meaning, if he just would have said what you're suggesting, Rabbi Meir, you're suggesting that Moshe should have said, look, if they don't go, then they get a chelek in Eretz Canaan, okay? I would have thought that if it says, let them get a piece of the action with the rest of you, it would have meant that they get a piece of Eretz Gilad with the rest of you. In other words, you guys like Eretz Gilad. You fought for Eretz Gilad. You want us to give you the whole Eretz Gilad. Well, if you do this, you get the whole Eretz Gilad. If not, you'll get a piece of Eretz Gilad, which you're going to share with all of the 12 Shvatim, right? So instead of getting the whole thing, you'll get 1/12 of it. Comes along, but in Eretz Canaan, you don't get anything. You said you don't like Eretz Canaan. Well, if you don't like Eretz Canaan, don't go there. That's great. So you were mevater, so to speak, by talking like that. You were mevater on your chelek in Eretz Canaan. Now you want us to give you Eretz Gilad? Show us. Show us what you're going to do for us. You know, then we'll let you have the whole Eretz Gilad. That's the point. Therefore, I need to write Be'eretz Canaan, that even if they don't do what they said they were going to do, that they're actually going to be getting a chelek of Eretz Canaan. And we don't say that they were mevater on everything. Okay, so Rabbi Meir obviously holds. Rabbi Meir says, if it says over there, it starts saying, betochachem. What would betochachem mean? V'yochazu betochachem. Betochachem would mean wherever you are going to be yorish, they will be yorish. And therefore, Klal Yisroel will be yorish on both sides of the Yarden. And therefore, I don't need Eretz Canaan because they were going to get both sides of the Yarden, but they were going to get it. A proportion in accordance with the Shevet, 1/12. So why did he need to say Eretz Canaan? He said Betochachem. Betochachem includes both Eretz Canaan and Eretz Yarden. Therefore, the only explanation is, says Rabbi Meir, it's coming to tell me you absolutely must make a Tanai Kaful. Now, the Braisa says something that's very disturbing in terms of understanding Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel. Because look at this Braisa. Rabbi Omer Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel. Look, I don't know what Rabbi Meir means. Let me give you an example of what this is like, okay? Moshe Amad Dovradam. Here you've got a guy who is giving out his last will and testaments. He's cutting up his estate among his kids. And he says, okay, so he's got three kids, three sons. So he says, son A, Ploni Bini, he should get Soda A. Ploni Bini, my other son, he should get Soda B. Now, my third son, if he gives $2 million, then he should get Soda 3. Okay? So Ploni Bini, Tein Matayim Zuz, Viraj Soda Ploni. But if he doesn't, the guy continues to speak, if he doesn't give $2 million, then Yirashi Mechav Bishar Nechasim. He will get a part of the other two fields together with the other kids. But he's not going to get that third field that he wants. So now, I am pointing out to you, so in other words, what are we talking about over here? Reuven the God, they're being compared over here to this third son. They have to give $2 million first. Then they get the third field. Okay. In this case, Reuven v'Gad, the $2 million are fighting for the rest of Eretz Yisrael and being in the forefront of the battle, right? Then they get the third field being Eretz Gilad, which is the field that they want. If they don't do the $2 million, meaning if they don't go and fight, they're still going to get the two fields. This is what this is like. Now, let me point out to you, says Rabbi Chanina, that the idea over here is that what boils down to the rights that he had to those other two fields. Where did they get the rights to the other two fields that he was assigning first to his other two sons, which are here the 12 Shvatim, the 10 other Shvatim, right? So, mi garam lo lirashi mechav b'shan echasim. What part of what the father said allowed those kids, meaning the third kid, in this case, Gad and Reuven, to even have part of what was given set aside to the first two sons? The fact that what you're calling the Tanai Kaful, because what he said was, Ve'im lo yitain, if he doesn't give the $2 million, then he takes a portion of their fields. But the only thing that gave them, the only statement that gave them the right to the two fields was that added statement. If he doesn't give the $2 million, so then he gets in the first two fields, which I already set aside for the other two sons. And I didn't include him. Okay. And if he hadn't said that, then obviously we would have interpreted the father's statement to mean that in the event that he gives $2 million, he gets in those other two fields. But if he doesn't give $2 million, he gets the third field. But if he doesn't give the $2 million, we're not going to give him a chelik in the first two fields. I already gave them to my other sons. And he's been pushing me for years. Dad, you know, you want this. And now you're not willing to do anything for it, you spoiled brat. So because of that, you don't get it. Okay, but I'll still give you a chelik with everybody else. That's how I understand. Well, the same thing is true over here. Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, look here, you spoiled brats. You want exactly what it is that you want for all of your property. Moshe Rabbeinu was not too positively inclined, as we see with Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven, having called them, you know, you rotten bums. Okay, so he's telling them, you did a job fine, but if not, you rotten brats, you don't get anything in the first part that I mentioned, which was Eretz Canaan. This is what it seems to be that Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel is saying in terms of this marshal. So if that's the fact, the reason that Moshe Rabbeinu had to say that you're going to get Eretz Canaan is because if not, they wouldn't have gotten Eretz Canaan. Now, this is very problematic because this is not what Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel said in the Mishnah at all. In the Mishnah, hold on a second here. This is not what Rabbi Chanina said in the Mishnah. In the Mishnah, Rabbi Chanina said that I would have said, afilu the Eretz Canaan. Afilu means they wouldn't have gotten anything, even in Eretz Canaan. Certainly they wouldn't have gotten anything in Eretz Gilad, right? That's why I need that Yudakefa. Why is Moshe Rabbeinu's doubling, in other words, giving us the other side, is basically, that gave them Eretz Gilad as well. It wasn't, because they wouldn't have gotten anything. Isn't that the way we understood the Mishnah? Moshe Rabbeinu has to say, well, if you don't do it, so then they're going to get together with you in Eretz Canaan. This is an even. So in other words, it was the statement that allowed them to have a regular chelek, betochachem, both in Eretz Canaan and in Eretz Gilad. And if it hadn't been said as this so-called Tanai Kofel, says Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel with a sarcastic tone, it's not a Tanai Kofel, it's what gives them their rights to Eretz Canaan and Eretz Gilad. But the Braita doesn't say this. The Braita is saying, and who gave them the rights to the rest of the fields which had already been given to the others? Only the extra words of Moshe Rabbeinu. So from here, it's mashma, that when Moshe Rabbeinu gave the rest, like the similarity in the marshal to the father, apparently the point that gives them a chelek in Eretz Canaan, that is to say, in the first two fields, only in the first two fields, that is what the extra words of Moshe Rabbeinu provided them. Which means that if he hadn't said those extra words, then they still would have gotten whatever they would get together with everyone else in Eretz Gilad. Basically, what Moshe Rabbeinu would have been saying would be, okay, you guys don't want Eretz Canaan? You don't get Eretz Canaan. You'll get your Eretz Gilad, but you'll only get 1/12 of it because, you know, everybody else is going to get Eretz Gilad also. As far as you're wanting to take the whole third field, that is to say the whole Eretz Gilad, that's going to cost you $2 million. In the case of here, that's going to cost you 14 years, 7 years, Moshe Rabbeinu made. They added the other 7 years. That's going to cost you 7 years of fighting on the front, right? So now God contradicts himself. In the Mishnah, he said you wouldn't have gotten anything. And in the Braita, he says you would have gotten part of Eretz Gilad. Okay. So now it seems to be a very clear contradiction, because in the Moshel, he's only giving the third field. Lokash. It's not a problem. There were two steps in the confrontation of Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel with Rabbi Meir, correct? So the first step of that confrontation is in the Mishnah. So there, Rabbi Meir is claiming you need the Tanai Kofel, and Rabbi Chanina is saying, no, you don't need the Tanai Kofel. It's just that if there wouldn't be the Tanai Kofel, I would have thought that you really don't get an inheritance. Says Rabbi Meir, I would never have thought that, because not to get an inheritance would be enough to save a nochazu betochachem. So obviously you would get an inheritance. So now Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel says, okay, you're right. But still, it would not have given you the right to the third part, right? So my first statement is only coming to tell you that they wouldn't have gotten anything. That's why I feel, because I thought you meant Moshe didn't have to say anything. I didn't realize you were focusing on the words Eretz Canaan. Then Rabbi Meir says to him, no, I didn't mean that. I mean Moshe could simply have said, V'nochazu betochachem. But why did he add the words Eretz Canaan if not to teach me that you have to actually have a precise opposite of Eretz Gilad? Eretz Gilad or Eretz Canaan. And there I'm giving you this marshal. That's not extra words, because if you hadn't said those extra words, they would have gotten a part of Eretz Gilad, but they would only have gotten each one of them 1/12, because they would have mixed together with the other Shvatim. But why would I give them anything in Eretz Canaan? They already rejected Eretz Canaan. We won't give them anything in Eretz Canaan. Therefore, we need to know to add the words Eretz Canaan. We're ready to give you Eretz Canaan. That's why I'm giving you this marshal. Obviously, the third kid would never have gotten anything in the first two fields that I gave my other two sons. The only thing that gives him the right to that is the fact that I said, well, then he gets a share in that. That's the point. So, indeed, there were two completely different stages. In the Braita, Rabbi Chanina says, look, you're right, Rabbi Meir. I would have known that they get a chelek in Eretz Gilad, but the point is, I would not have known they get a chelek in Eretz Canaan, because that was the first two fields. Here's the marshal. What gives you the right to Eretz Canaan? The fact that you said Eretz Canaan. But that's not because it's an Ikofu. That's in order for me to know this additional point. The additional point is, not only do you get a 1/12 of Eretz Gilad, but you get a 1/12 apiece of Eretz Canaan. Okay. All right. So now the question is, now I understand the two shitot, how to read the pasuk. Okay. So we've got a lot of places in the Torah where there seems to be a getter of a Tanai Kaful besides this. And let's take a look at the earliest Tanai in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Cain, Im Tetiv Se'et, V'im Lo Tetiv, ha 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 ha, look at this. So now this sounds like a Tanai Kaful. So if you're a good boy and you do teshuvah, so then you're going to get sachar. But if not, lepetach hatat rovetz, oh boy, hell is sitting there at the door waiting for you to fall right in. Okay, so why did it have to say both? Because of what Rebbe Meir said. So bishlam al Rebbe Meir, yes, that makes sense. Hainu dichtiv. It's apparently the Torah had to repeat the fact that you're going to go to hell. But according to Rabbi Hanina, why do I need to say that? Obviously, if I'm telling you that you will get good stuff if you start being a mensch, so then, but if you don't start being a mensch, so then I understand that over there, you're going to go straight to hell, right? Why do I need to say it according to Rabbi Hanina? Isn't it obvious? No, it's not obvious because, look, Rabbi Hanina says, suppose HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Kainim Tetiv Se'et. What would that have meant? Would have meant, look, you can always get yourself back by doing teshuvah, and you could still have sechar, and still make something out of your life, and that'll be wonderful. If you don't, so then you won't get all of these wonderful things. I'm not telling you you'll go to hell. I never said anything about hell, did I? So if that would be the case, im teitiv, so then you'll get sechar for having lived a good life. If you're not, so then you die, and there'll be nothing left of you, you know, but I'm not saying I'm going to punish you. Lo agra velo dina. So maybe there would be none of this, you know, se'et, you're going to get all kinds of great things. No, you won't get all kinds of great things. That doesn't mean I'm going to burn you. So kamash malan, that's why I need the second part. But im lo tetiv, so then you're going to burn. Okay, fine. Let's take a look at another case. How about Avram Avinu with Eliezer Eved Avram? Okay, so we got the whole story over there. In which, and we have that story twice, remember, we have Eliezer saying over this story, and we have the original story in which Eliezer takes on a shvua to Avram Avinu. Now, the question is there a din, by this fascinating thing, is there a din of a shvua and Tanai Kaful and saying all of these halachas, even for a ben noach? Because, I mean, Lachor, we're talking over there about a ben noach, right? So there are those who bring a raya from here that you see that where something is part of seichel, that then it doesn't need to be given as a separate sheva mitzvah sebenei neach. Anything that is part of seichel, of what it is, that it means to be human and that your words mean something, is ipso facto included in the dinim of the sheva mitzvah sebenei neach. Okay, I mean, this is achreinish, a discussion. The question, of course, is whether dinim bichlal, being as dinim, there's a big machlok, is what do dinim mean? That there has to be a social contract. If that's what dinim means, so then the same thing would be true over here. The social contract would obviously include keeping your word, making commitments and so on. Okay, just pointing out that it's fascinating. The Gemara thinks that it's obvious that we could bring a raya about whether you need Tanai Kaful from a whole discussion that happened way before the Torah was given. And we don't have the dinamat of the Torah applying yet. So, Bishlam al Rebbe Meir. So, Rebbe Meir, who says, now listen, guys, Rashi understands that the issue over here, and this addresses a very important thing that Tosfos raises, are these tna'im? Are they actually conditions? Or are they definitions of how to interpret my words? I mean, because what it is that Avram says, you know, well, listen, if they refuse to give you the girl, you know, then osti nakemi alati, so then you're free of responsibility for the shvua that I'm giving you. And therefore he says both sides, right? First he says, don't take up Canaanite, because I want you first, you know, first you got to go to Beit Avi and Mishpachti and take a wife. So says Eliezer to them, so I said, and im lo tovea yishala lechet acharei, what if she doesn't want to come with me? So then my master says to me, astina kemi alati zot, and so on, if you come to me b'shpachti and they don't give her, okay, so then you're free. Okay, now why did that need to be said? That seems to be the Tanai Kaful. If they will give it, and if they won't give it, right? So why is that necessary? But it's not a t'nai. It's an interpretation. It's not a t'nai, as Tosis points out. So what it seems to be is that the Gemara over here is comparing the din of t'nai kaful to the halacha of, and this is another Gavi point, get your pen out there, that michlal lav ata shomea hein. So remember, we had that whole discussion. Do we say, in general, not because it's a t'nai, which has very specific dinim in terms of how it redefines a transaction, but because it is an interpretation. If a person says the positive, then it means the negative is implied. If he says the negative, it implies the positive. That's called michlal lav ata shomea hein, michlal ein ata shomea lav. In which case, it would not be only a din in t'nai. The problem is that the Rambam paskins against, he paskins a contradiction. That we do say, but we don't say that you don't need a t'nai kaful. You do need a t'nai kaful. Good heavens. So this opens up a Pandora's box. That means that the whole discussion in the Gemara seems to be confusing two completely different issues. So I want to also put you on notice that there's an amazing Rivet who says, look, I want to tell you a little secret. That's literally his language. I'm going to tell you a little secret that none of the Rishonim, he's talking about Rishonim and his vision of Rishonim, none of the Gemaras ever explained this. So I'm going to tell you a little secret that you need to use your brains to understand. This whole discussion of t'nai kaful is not a discussion in places where you're talking about what is going to be long-term. It's only a din where we're talking about an immediate situation. Give Eretz Yisrael to them here or give Eretz Yisrael to them there. There, indeed, we're about to make that decision. There you need a t'nai kaful. Anything else is long-term promises or not promises. Over there, obviously, you say to somebody, you know, if you're good to me for the next 10 years, I'm going to leave you something in my will, you know? So then we're going to say, okay, so then, but that's not a promise because I didn't say, but if you're not good to me, I'm not going to leave you something. You know, so you have to leave them something in their will right then and there. That's ridiculous. Obviously, that's not considered to be a din and a t'nai. Okay, so this bichlal is the Rivet's approach, which totally changes where it is we would apply. And it actually makes these gemaras very problematic because they all seem to be long-term, im teitiv se'et, im lo teitiv, or the question with Eliezer, Evet Avram. Okay, so just keep this in mind in the back, and let's continue. This is a long sugya. We're not going to be able to get through the whole thing, unfortunately. Yeah. All right, but we're getting close. So now that would explain, according to Rabbi Meir, why Avram Avinu need to tell him, but if not, astina kemi alati. But according to Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, why do I need him to say, if not? Obviously, if not. No, says Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel. Because I need Avram to say, astina ke, because Salkadai Tchamina would have thought that first he says, look, if she says, the girl says, okay, I'm ready to get married, and then the family doesn't agree. So then, maybe I would have thought, if I hadn't told you, maybe I would have thought, listen, Eliezer is a pretty strong guy, you know? I mean, especially if he's Og Melchabashan. And he certainly was the only person that Avram Avinu needed in order to fight the First World War, according to the Medrash, right? So all of the people that he took with him were just little parts of the laser beams on Og Melchabashan, right? So I would have thought the interpretation is that, look, if you find the girl and she is ready to come, shoot the rest of the family, and make off with the girl. Right? That's what I would have thought. Therefore, he tells them, no, Avram told me that if you guys don't agree, then I don't have to worry about you. So, you know, just make up your minds, whatever you want. You know, you're going to send her, you're not going to send her. And therefore, Avram says to him, that kamash malan, no, then you're out of it. And then, okay, so why does it say, im lo tove ha'isha? That's another. And if not, if the woman doesn't want, so then you are also clear. Remember that he says it over differently than it appears originally. Remember, we have the story twice. Once where Eliezer says what Avram said, and once where the Torah says what Avram says, which teaches us tremendous things as we interpret those two things. And it's the chavivus of the avdei avos. But anyway, I need that part also. Because I would have still thought that, let's say the family says, this is a great idea, you know, and then Eliezer would have said to Rivka, do you want to come? And she says, no, I don't want to come. So if the family agrees, you would think that you should bop her over the head, put her on the back of the saddle, and make off, right? So if she doesn't want, Naisila Balkorcha, bring her. Kamash Malan, that we need both of their agreement.
So we find that the Tayyar Bris of Kukosai has both the positive and the negative. Who holds that there's no need to make a Tanai Kofel, the Im. Why do you need Im? It's because Sakura Dhamina, Imbukotai Telechu, you'll get a bracha. Imbukotai Timasu, lo bracha, velo klalam, because there's a lot of things there in the story of the Chukotai that are things that happen anyway. You know, will it rain? Yeah, I mean, it rains. It doesn't mean that you'll get the most incredible rains right at the right time and so on. But this has to tell you, no, it's even the natural things that otherwise you would have had, you're not going to have. So that it's a klola. Kamash malon, that yes, it will actually do the opposite. Bishlamal Rabbi Meir, who says that you need to have a Tanai Kofel. So that explains why it says in Yeshayahu, Im tovu shmatem. So if you listen to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's mitzvahs, tuv ha'aretz tochelu, but im temeanu meritem, cherev tuklu kipi Hashem diber. So why do I have to say both of that? If I told you already that tuv ha'aretz tochelu, so obviously, according to Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel Lomeli, I understand that if you're not going to listen, you're going to be in hot water. Again, it's true, because Sakatai Chanina, im tovu, then you'll get all of these tevas. Yes, tochelu. Im to me'anu, whatever. So you'll be left to mikra, whatever happens. Lo tova, velo ra'ah. Kamash balanda, no. Kadosh Baruch Hu's into this to the point where he'll see to it that you will suffer. So what is the meaning, by the way? It's a very funny lashon in that pasuk. Cherev to ukilu? I mean, if it means that the sword will consume you, then it should say becherev to ukilu. With the sword, you will be consumed. I mean, cherev to ukilu doesn't really make much sense at all, unless it means you will be fed cherev. But how can you be fed cherev? Amar Rava, yes, there is some food that is like cherev. There's people that actually drink Coke. So milcha galanita, nahama desare, which is akushe, plus bitsali. I mean, imagine a meal that has this type of sea salt. You know, it's a filthy, dirty, thick salt. And bread that's made out of barley, and it's hard. And you eat that together with the onions. Oh my God. The Omar Mar Prat Purane Chareva Bemelach Ubetzolim. Make a nice meal out of that. Kashim Laguf Kecharavot. That's exactly the point. So he compares it to eating swords. So that's what it means in the Pasuk. The Yavetz claims that Cherev backwards stands for an acronym for this stuff, because the Beis is the Betzolim and the Reish is the Chareva, and the Chet. How did he learn the Chet again? I don't remember. The Milcha, right. The Chet was the Milcha.